Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Greetings and welcome to this midweek podcast here on Where Did the Road Go? On tonight's show, I'm going to be talking with Michael Marshall Smith. And Michael's a author of fiction, unlike most of the guests we have on the show. But his subject matter goes well into the subject matter that we deal with on the show. And as you'll see, as we get into this conversation, we start talking about consciousness and stuff like that. And actually, off the air, he said he regularly reads the 14 times from cover to cover. So he was, as far as I was concerned, he was the perfect guest. His books, especially his Strawman series, absolutely fantastic and highly, I cannot recommend them enough, although they are pretty brutal. So if you're not a fan of, I mean, it's not exactly horror. It's kind of, but it's horror in a sense. It's not supernatural horror, let's put it that way. So, yeah, we talk about a little of everything, some of the movies he has been working on, a bunch of his books, his inspiration, and a bunch of other stuff. So, I hope you enjoy this. Here we go. All right, so I'm talking with Michael Marshall Smith, and you are an author of quite a few books now. How many do you have out? Like, full novels?
You guys should have a simple answer to that question, but I don't. So I'll tell you what, let's list them in chronological order.
Okay.
Only Forward, Spares, One of Us, Strawman, The Lonely Dead, which was called The Upright Man in America. I hope you're counting these. Six was Blood of Angels, Intruders, Bad Things, Killer Move, We Are Here, and there was a sort of slightly shorter one in there called The Servants. So that's how many? How many was that?
Around 10.
Yeah, sounds about right. 10 or 11, something like that.
And you have a bunch of short stories published as well.
I do. I mean, short stories was my like a lot of people in these sort of genres, was my introduction and my first love in some ways. So I've had I forget the number, but something like 80 or 90 stories have been published now. I don't write them as often as I used to, but I do when I can.
And your earlier stuff, I mean, I've read a mix of your stuff now. I read some of your early short stories. I'm partway through Only Forward. They seem to have more of a sense of humor, like a sort of a dystopian, dark humor behind it.
Yeah, I mean, the in terms of how things developed, I originally wrote, I guess what you'd call horror short stories, but it was horror in a very sort of English tradition of the 90s, which was very much sort of tales of unease and slightly odd and more sort of Twilight Zone. You know, not they didn't tend to have things very often, horror tropes like vampires or, you know, Frankenstein, that kind of thing. It's unease. It's dark sort of fiction. Then completely out of left field, I wrote my first novel, which was Only Forward, and from nowhere found that I was using a lot more humor for a start, and also sitting in the future, which I'd never done before. So once I'd done that, I then was sort of in that track for a little while, and the next two novels, Spares and One of Us, were similar. But then with The Strawman, I made a big sort of another swerve, so that changed at that point.
Now, Only Forward, I mean, it reminds me of like Douglas Adams was writing really dark stuff.
Yeah, I mean, very possibly so. I mean, Douglas Adams, you know, I used to, like a lot of people, but I think probably particularly English people of my generation, Douglas Adams, you know, was a god. I remember hearing, you know, that series on the radio when it first came out, and yep, just literally taping it and listening to it over and over and over again, to the point where it's probably sort of imprinted in my DNA at some sort of level. But then I went from reading that, and also I read a certain amount of you know, Ray Bradbury, when I was a kid, and then someone turned me on to Stephen King, and from there I went into Peter Straub and Ramsey Campbell and Clive Barker to a degree. So I guess you get that combination of, you know, the surreality and the humor of Douglas Adams with the, you know, the darkness that you get from some of those horror writers, and maybe, you know, somewhere in between is where Only Forward came from.
And The Strawman was the first thing, and I honestly picked this up. There's a local bookstore. It was in a big red barn, and it was called Phoenix Books, and unfortunately he went out of business.
Right.
And it was the most awesome used bookstore ever. And he just put all his paperbacks and stuff on the front porch for people to take for free.
Well, that's probably why he went out of business.
Well, no, that's what he did when he went out of business.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was going to say, as a business model, there's some flaws in that I can see. But...
yes.
Okay, so you basically picked it up free outside.
I picked it up free. I'd never heard of you. I saw the book, and for some reason, it's just something about it struck me, and I'm like, I need to read this one. Because I'm not a big fiction reader. I read a lot of nonfiction. Every once in a while, I read fiction. And I was blown away by this book.
Oh, good, good.
And I think this is, I was the most impressed I've been since I've read, like, Hyperion from Dan Simmons years ago.
Oh, okay, wow, okay.
And I was floored, and I'm, like, telling everyone about it, and I just, it struck me on so many levels. I mean, not only are you an excellent writer, but the ideas are so novel that you approach in here, you almost turn conspiracies on their head.
Yeah, well, how that came about was weird, because I'd written these three sort of, semi-near future dystopian surreal thriller things. But in the background, for a long time, I had been interested in conspiracies and interested in the psychology of murder and serial killing. And it just bugged me to the point where I thought, okay, you know what, I'm going to have to write this. And so I wrote The Straw Man, which was difficult in a lot of ways because... you know, my publishers were used to me doing one particular kind of thing, and then I did something which was completely different. You know, it was set in the present day rather than it being set in the future. There was next to no humor in it, you know, both things because I wanted to take both conspiracy and serial killing seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think with both humor is inappropriate in that context, I think. And if you said it in the future, there's a danger that distances people from the reality of what you're talking about, because if it's science fiction, anything can be true.
Right.
And so it was quite a big sort of break in what I did. And I then followed it up with two more in the same series.
Which made me very happy, because I got done that, and I said, please let him have written more about this. And immediately went out and bought them. And... You, especially with the second one, I think you have storylines there that seem like there's no way you're going to connect them. You know, you have one storyline that deals with Bigfoot, and then a continuation of the Straw Men, very obviously the where that novel leads off. And you sit there, and I actually just lent it to a friend of mine, and he said the same thing. He's like, I don't know how he's going to connect these two things.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it seems that it is something that I occasionally do in books. And I mean, one of the reasons why Straw Man has not yet made it to the screen, and it's come close a couple of times. But part of the challenge that, I mean, you know, never mind the second book, the first book, you know, you have John Zant, and then you also have Ward Hopkins, both of whom are basically converging upon the same sort of material, but take about half a book to do so.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I've long argued on this, that I think audiences are intelligent enough to think, okay, well, we're watching a television show, and it has these two separate characters in. I'm going to trust that sooner or later it will turn out that they're related. But that appears to have been a challenge for people who've been trying to adapt it. And yeah, it's definitely true in The Lonely Dead, or The Upright Man, as it was called here, that again, there's that sort of two narrative threads, which I hope do eventually successfully come together. But for a while, they're kind of far apart.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful way of connecting them. I'm just sitting there going, son of a bitch.
Good.
And the last one's great as well. I mean, you didn't lose anything with the three novels, and I think part of the reason is you write very strong characters.
Good, good. Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is those characters have absolutely stuck with me. I mean, it's about 10 years since I did Blood of Angels, but I have had all that time another idea for a follow-up, a sort of full-on follow-up. Part of the reason why I sort of, you know, take it so seriously is the fact that amongst all the characters that I've done, those are the ones that sort of have felt realist to me and still sit there in a bit of me thinks, well, you know, I'd like to go back. What's happening 10 years later? What's happening in their lives? You know, how has the world changed? I mean, to be absolutely honest, with events of, you know, particularly 2016, it's hard to keep up in terms of, you know, conspiracy and terrorist attacks and so on.
Yeah.
And indeed, some of the ideas that I had for a Straw Man book are, you know, almost obsolete now because of events that have taken place. So,
So do you think it's going to happen? Is there going to be a fourth part?
I think there probably will be, but I need to think about it a bit. I mean, I think 2016 has been a very extraordinary year in a lot of ways, and I think the rise of conspiracy theory from being something, you know, because when I was first getting into it, you know, 20 years ago, it was it was a minor thing. It was something that, you know, that people got into, and it was a small thing. Whereas, you know, as we're seeing increasingly in this election year, conspiracy and rather, you know, whacked out views of reality and how politics operate are being pulled very firmly into the mainstream.
Yeah.
And with a result that there's an incredible dumbing down of them, you know, and the things that need to be communicated in 140 characters. And so a lot of the original subtlety or for me intrigue of conspiracy has been bashed out by the fact that it's being turned to political gains and political aims and has been overly simplified. So, you know, I don't know. So I'd need to think about it from that. And the rise of social media makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sit still for long when you're writing stuff that's supposed to sort of reflect contemporary society, because it does change pretty quickly.
And it seems to be changing quicker as it goes. It's not just that it changes quickly, it's changing quicker and quicker.
I think it is. And I think, you know, the news cycle and the speed with which people expect to get information and the speed with which, you know, people then respond to that information and then respond to themselves responding to that information, it just becomes a sort of vortex of speculation and misinformation. And, you know, in terms of information gathering, that certainly changed. And technology seems to be going, you know, faster and faster as well. So, but I think with this material, you can always take a step back. You can always say, fine, these things are changing, but within that, they are manifesting certain fundamental things about human nature, which probably haven't changed in 60,000 years. And so you try to sort of take it from that perspective, and hopefully you can get at some sort of truth, regardless of how fast society is changing on the outside.
Now, how come the second book had a different name in the US from the UK?
It was just a publisher decision, actually. The feeling was that it was a stronger title for the US. And I gather that The Upright Man has somewhat more of a sort of resonance in the US than it does in the UK. I mean, The Upright Man in the UK doesn't have a lot of resonance, but I was told that it had an adequate resonance. I mean, I actually think it was a mistake, because I think The Lonely Dead is a better title.
So do I.
But, well, good. I think there were a number of things that, you know, I was trying to think the other day, because somebody asked me about this. You know, very often titles get changed. When I hand in a book now, I know that the title I hand it in under may very well not be the title it goes out under, which frustrates me, because often you write to a title, or you get to the end of a book and say, okay, this is what this is. This is the summation of this. But they are part of the marketing process, and so, you know, there will be people who will sit in rooms and say, well, no, it doesn't, I don't care how relevant that is or how attractive a form of words that is, that's not going to sell books in da 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 da. And so you do end up with these things being changed, and The Upright Man was an example of that, sadly.
Well, The Upright Man, I mean, it makes sense as a title, because it's about the upright man, but I think from a perspective of someone who hasn't maybe read the first volume, that just it's just a weird name.
It doesn't it doesn't really leap out. It doesn't drag you in. And I think, you know, things like, and also I didn't like The American Jacket much either, which I don't think did it much good. But so I'm not just sitting here whining. It's just one of these things that because the weird thing is, you know, you sit down and you spend a year doing, because it, you know, from front to back, from the original idea to when you're done and dusted and it eventually comes out, it's about a year of your life. And a lot of that is day-to-day slog or inspiration, or, you know, a lot of time and energy goes in. But you know that ultimately what may make the difference is the jacket, which you will only have so much say over, and the title, which you may have had to, you know, go into a battle over and may have lost that battle. So it's one of the weird things about being a writer, really. You sort of, you do eventually have to trust and hand yourself over to people who do the publishing job. And to be honest, in my life, most of the time I've been very, very happy with the results. But every now and then you get something you think, well, maybe that wasn't the best call.
How important do you think that the things like the cover artwork and stuff are in today's world, with so many people using the electronic type of book rather than the physical?
I think they do still make a difference, because I think, for example, and I was a graphic designer years and years ago, not of books, but it's something that I do have an awareness of. And it comes down to things like, you need to make sure that you've got a jacket which will reduce small and look punchy on online sites. You know, a lot of people now don't see the books that they buy by walking into a bricks and mortar bookstore and having it there life size, they'll be flicking through something on their phone, and so you'll have really quite a tiny icon, which now needs to catch people's eye. And so I think that's why you'll sometimes see a slight lack of subtlety in certain types of book jacket, because they're catering for that market.
Now, were the Strawman books re-released?
Re-released as e-books.
Oh, as e-books. Okay.
Yes, they are. They are now available as e-books. Yes.
Gotcha. All right. And you also were responsible for what ended up being the BBC series of the name's Intruders. Yes.
Intruders. Yes. Yeah.
And that was actually the first thing. Before I read The Strawman, I had seen Intruders, and I absolutely loved it. And I just, you know, it wasn't until I looked up your site after reading The Strawman that I realized you were responsible for that as well.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad to hear. I mean, I was, you know, Intruders was a standalone novel. I at the time I thought, oh, maybe I'll write another one, because I had some further ideas for it. But as sometimes happens with me, I get distracted into writing something else instead. And, you know, it was, the whole Intruders TV story is almost a sort of, you know, microcosm of how it, you know, it took nearly 10 years from someone first optioning it for it to come out.
Wow.
And I was delighted with what they did. It was, you know, I thought it was edgy, unusual. It didn't pander. It said, you know, they did a very sort of sympathetic job of adapting the original book, and they made it hard. They made it dark, and they didn't spoon feed. And I was very happy with the end result. You know, I'd have loved to see more of it. And, you know, I had some meetings with Glenn Morgan and with the producers, and, you know, we had further ideas for further series, but we didn't get the opportunity, which is a shame.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, it has sort of an ending, but it definitely leads off where you're wondering what else is going on. How much of the book ended up...
I'm sorry, I missed that.
How much of the book ended up in the actual story, in the BBC version?
The first half of it was really very similar. In the second half, they made some changes. You know, partly the kind of unavoidable changes you make when you're converting a story from one medium to another. But they also made some changes to simplify. And, you know, to be absolutely honest, I think there were some changes that were made for budgetary reasons as well. And I'm not entirely sure that all of those were completely successful. But in general, and certainly in the ways that mattered in terms of the idea and the atmosphere and the general flavor of it, I think they absolutely nailed it. So I was, you know, I was very happy with the end result.
Nice. Have you had any of your other novels adapted into film yet?
No, I mean, as always, there's a bunch of stuff which is sort of in background. Only Forward, you know, is people has come close a couple of times. To say The Straw Man, I'm actually involved in another attempt to get that sort of adapted at the moment. There's a few short stories which are in sort of development. A lot of these, you know, as I pointed out with The Intruders, sometimes it can be very long roads. That took 10 years. Strawman, if it eventually happens, will be longer than that. It's difficult. And, you know, part of the change that, again, of the last 10 years is realizing that for some projects, and I think Strawman would very much be one of them, when I wrote that, my assumption would be, well, it'd be cool if it was a movie. But I think having seen a lot of the stuff that's been done from, you know, Sopranos on and any number of things, actually I suspect a 10-part TV series would suit that material far better than a movie, because it gives plenty of time for texture and character and background and so on to be properly developed, rather than just having to chuck a whole bunch of stuff out because it won't fit in a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you that, if you would rather see it as a TV series or a movie. In reading it, I can visualize a movie or a TV show or, you know, a TV series being made of it. I mean, it just, the way you write lends itself to that visual sort of medium.
Well, I'm a very sort of visual writer, in the sense that I tend to see things pretty clearly in my mind's eye and then describe them. And, you know, the book, I've just finished a first draft of something at the moment. And as I sometimes do, I've backed myself into quite a tight environmental corner in the book. It's quite a constrained environment, and it's something that I can see with absolute clarity. And, you know, if I had the skills, I could sort of do a scale drawing of it, you know, brick by brick. which is good, because you know, it enables me to sort of see it clearly and describe it clearly. But sometimes, particularly when you're thrashing through the knotty climax of a book, I have to remind myself, actually, dude, remember, this isn't real. If you find that you can't do it here and you want to knock down one of those walls, you can do that, because they're not real walls. But I do, you know, it's for me, it's part of the writing process, imagining the location, you know, be it something as simple as a building or a whole town, because I think the environments, the locales in which books take place, are just as much a character and add just as much flavor as the characters, really.
Yeah. You have a couple of film, like there's this Unbelief film that's going through festivals now. Did you write that?
I co-wrote it with a director. Yeah. I mean, something that I've done a certain, or I've been keen to do a little bit over the last few years is, you know, I've spent quite a lot of time in rooms with people who claim they're going to make a slate of feature movies, and you know that they've worked out how to break the system and da 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 da, and pretty much every single one of those has turned out to be clueless ultimately. But what I have been very lucky to encounter a couple of times are sort of up and coming directors who I've met and who've emailed me both times out of the blue and said, "Are really." The first one was a guy called Simon Durick, who did a short movie of a short story of mine called Later, and then there was Fabien Martorell, who did Unbelief, and they both got in touch with me via social media, I think, or the internet or somehow, and basically just enthused at me about wanting to do these particular things. And I don't know whether just my antenna has got better, or part of me just thought, yeah, fine, if you want to do this, I'll give you all the support you want, I'll co-write the script if you want, but let's just do this. Let's not bother about the money, because there's not going to be any, but let's just focus on getting a decent job done. And I think with both Later and Unbelief, I mean, Unbelief is stellar. I mean, it's really, really good, and it's got Tobin Bell in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looks fabulous. And you know, in a way, there's more pleasure to having something like that actually happen than forever chasing the will-o'-the-wisp of, no, it'll be $100 million movie, and you just sit there thinking, no, it won't, dude. We both know that's not the case. Let's not have this conversation here.
When is Unbelief widely available?
You know, I don't know. Somebody asked me about that. At the moment, it's still doing the festival circuit, and so for because of that, it's still only available in that format. I will check with the director to find that out and sort of probably announce it on my website or on Twitter or something, because I know a lot of people are sort of you know, intrigued to see it, and I'd love them to see it, because I think he's done such a good job.
And it looks like it's won a ton of awards.
It has. It's done extremely well. But I mean, as I say, you know, once it's eventually available, I mean, it's just, apart from the fact that it's only 22 minutes long, it, you know, you could go and see it in a cinema, and it's great. It's, yeah, it's very, very good. And he and I are talking, you know, still talking to each other about a couple of things. He's interested in doing a short story of mine and a book of mine called Killer Move. He and I co-wrote a script for, which we're getting just a tiny bit of traction with. So as I say, increasingly, I like to work with the people who some intuitive sense says, yeah, you're going to make your mark on somebody's tree. It's actually worth working with you for a while, and trusting your take, because I think you do get to the point where you get a sense that the people are actually going to get something done.
Nice. Now, in looking at something like The Straw Man to adapt to any kind of visual medium, there are some pretty brutal scenes in there.
There are. Yeah, I mean, it's, there really are, and again, I think that would be one of the things where you have to make a call about whether or not that's something you actually want to see, or whether it's something you want to imply. You know, I'm not a big fan of doing stuff, you know, blatantly and visually and disturbingly, unless it's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been a horror fan for a long, 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 long time. But I have a real problem with the subgenre, which is loosely termed, you know, torture porn.
I not only can't stand it.
I have a real problem with that. I think it's one of these things that just caters to absolutely the wrong, and a very superficial understanding of what horror is as well, because that's just sort of unpleasant. And it's, you know, good horror should be about unease. It should be about unnerving people, disturbing them, asking them to sort of look again at how they feel about certain sort of eternal verities like death and love and these kind of things. And these are important things which can be done without absolutely face-on graphic violence. And so, yeah, I suspect a couple of things would be taken out of the straw man. And I think that's fine, because I think the shock effect you get out of a 2-second event should be as nothing compared to, you know, you want people to walk away thinking, God, what if that's really true? If there really is a conspiracy that's done that, because actually it kind of, I mean, part of the problem I have with writing books is I make a bunch of stuff up, and by the time I've finished writing the book, I believe it because I've spent a year thinking it, and I have to remind myself every now and then that it's not, as far as I know, actually true. But I mean, those are the bits that I want to communicate. Every now and then you need to throw a grenade into people's sensory perception just to go, poof. But I don't think those necessarily have to be on screen.
The whole concept of the straw man is actually very plausible, and I think that's one of the things I really liked about it. Like the main character there, the upright man, goes into a couple of, I think, in two of the books, he goes on little tirades, or maybe it's in the statement or something from the straw man, a little tirade of like how things are, and I'm just like, wow, that actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, I know it's not true, but damn.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's possibly to an extent. I mean, whenever I write a book, you know, for better or worse, and sometimes I think it makes my life harder, there's generally some strong idea that I'm trying to communicate, some underpinning thing about either society or culture or very often human nature, that's the thing that drives me to get it written in the first place. Sometimes, you know, I have to rein back on it. You know, there's a bit in the straw man where there's a certain amount of speculation about, you know, because one of the questions that led to the writing of the straw man in the first place is, why did we move from the hunter-gatherer lifestyle to a farming lifestyle? Mm-hmm. And that's a question that is, you know, far from solved in academic circles. And I thought, well, yeah, that's kind of a thing, because actually, you know, the change caused more work, it caused more disease, it was less free, it sort of interfered with previously long established divisions of labor. Well, why would it happen? And so I got speculating about that, and the first draft of the straw man had about, I don't know, 10 pages on that. And then you go through the editing process, and it really is one of those sort of kill your babies things, and you think, well, this is of huge interest to me, and this was the impetus to get me to write this book, but I suspect a lot of readers only need a page of this. They don't need 10 pages, and so you have to condense it down.
Well, I found it fascinating. I mean, just because, like I said, because it was so plausible. I mean, it's not, I realize you were making it up, but it just had that feel of something.
Well, as far as you know, that's the
thing. Right. But it had the feel of something that could be possible. It's as valid as a lot of other conspiracy theories out there, honestly.
Well, I think, I mean, for me, I'm regarding some conspiracy theories with a little bit of a sort of jaundiced eye at the moment, simply because of some of the ones that have been put about at the moment as, you know, touted as sort of actual political reporting. Yeah. But aside from those, they've always just been fascinating to me, because and in a way, I don't kind of have to believe them. It's a bit like the, you know, were the pyramids an ancient power source or da da da. It's like, well, no, of course they weren't. But it's interesting to speculate. And I think if you regard some of them almost as fantasy novels, and say, okay, well, what if this were true? Where would it lead? How would it change things? What, and how can that be tied into human understanding of the world on two levels? Partly because it might explain the world in a slightly different way. Partly also, why are we so interested? Why do we have this huge belief that there is this truth that's we're being occluded from, that there is this thing going on behind the veil? Why do we believe that? Why is it so core to our sort of suspicion about the world? And I find that particular aspect of it extremely interesting.
Yeah. Oh, so do I. And then sometimes, you know, even if you look at it and go, okay, I can't take this seriously, but it's a good story.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And the opening to the straw man is one of those brutal moments. Like, I think I read that and I sat there and went, what am I reading? Because and the thing is, yeah, it's you're taking similarities to real events. You're not using real events in the book, but you're taking things that are similar. And I think sometimes people need something to explain why these things happen. So I think that's some of where the conspiracy comes up. And I think that's where your book fits in very nicely, because it gives people that, that thing. Here's an idea of what might be tying all these horrible things together.
No, absolutely. Because, you know, we all at some stage in our lives experience chaotic events, things that come completely from the outside that we have no way of, you know, the wave you don't see coming, the thing that just flattens you. So we want some sort of explanation. We want to try and understand how those things happen. And it's also a matter of the fact that, you know, I remember once I was working on a movie, because I've done some very unsuccessful screenwriting as well. I've spent a long time trying to adapt. I can't remember what it was. But the producer, one of the producers, basically had one shtick, and his shtick was, nobody gets up in the morning and decides to be evil. They have a reason for what they're doing, and as far as they're concerned, they're right.
Sure.
And it sounds kind of obvious, but I'd never sort of looked at it head on before. And thought, yeah, nobody gets up and cackles and says, right, because of my evilness, I shall just do evil today for the sake of it. You know, for them, it is a good. There is some reason, mm-hmm. And it's probably not going to be a particularly well thought out reason, and it may be based in psychosis, but there will be a reason for what they're doing.
Sure, everyone thinks they're the good guy.
Yeah, or at least not the bad guy, or that they're doing the right thing, or that it'll all turn out okay, or that there's some higher power directing them. There is always, however speciously, there is reason behind acts of unreason. And I think that's what sometimes a conspiracy novel can try to do, which is to find, even if it involves turning normal thought upside down, it's a way of trying to find the reason within the unreason, and that can be really interesting if you find it.
Now, you actually write under two names. You write under Michael Marshall Smith and Michael Marshall. Why the change?
That, again, was a publishing issue. I'd written the kind of horror short stories under Michael Marshall Smith, and then I wrote the first three somewhat science fiction novels under Michael Marshall Smith. And then I wrote The Straw Man, which was, you know, not science fiction, not attempting to be amusing, about serial killers, a thriller. And it was just at the time where, you know, electronic point of sale was really becoming a big sort of issue, and my English publishers, I think, were kind of going to go with it, but the American publishers just sort of said, no, yeah, this is going to be extremely confusing. People come to you for, you know, surreal science fiction. If you hand them this, they're just not going to get it, and it could actually be a backlash. So I made that change. I mean, it's been an open secret for however long it is now, and I've now actually written far more novels as Michael Marshall than I ever did as Michael Marshall Smith, although I have actually just written a new Michael Marshall Smith novel. It's been an open secret for anybody who cares, and it's, if I had my time again, I might have fought a little bit harder. But again, as I referenced earlier, it's not just a matter of writing books. It's not just trying to write the best book you can. There's a whole bunch of other meta stuff that you have to deal with. And so that was a decision that was made at the time. It's too late to do anything about it now.
Well, it's not that big of a deal. It's just, you know, a minor change, really.
It is. I mean, I think there's something nice about the idea of just saying, you know what, for better or worse, and I'm not making any judgment about quality here, I'm this guy, I have approximately this voice, and I write a bunch of stuff, and it's different. And it would be lovely to be able to do that and just be able to do it. And there are a couple of writers, you know, people like Neil Gaiman, who can get away with that. I mean, Neil Gaiman is extremely talented and has a very recognizable voice, and so he's somehow managed to make that work. But for most of us, it's too confusing for people, and you've got to sort of play the publishing game.
See, and I was confused the other way, because I was looking for Michael Marshall, and I'm finding Michael Marshall Smith, and I'm going, is this the same person? Yeah, this is the same person. Okay.
Yeah. It's difficult, because in some ways, I think the initial idea for me was that I would say, okay, so I'll make a demarcation here, a bit like Ian Banks and Ian M. Banks. I'll write some stuff which is the Michael Marshall stuff, which is more mystery and crime and conspiracy. And then I'll keep the Michael Marshall Smith name for doing slightly more horror and science fiction. But I'm just not that organized a writer, unfortunately. And so some of the Michael Marshall novels, starting with The Intruders and then Bad Things to a degree, have become somewhat more non-consensual reality in terms of introducing hints of the supernatural and so on, and so slightly muddied those waters. I mean, I kind of don't care when I read a book. I want someone's voice to grip me. I want their ideas to be intriguing. I want their characters to be credible. I want them to just grip me. If they're every now and then going to wander off the straight and narrow in terms of what genre they're writing, then that doesn't bother me. But it bothers a lot of people. So that's why, you know, one tries to keep a distinction.
Now, you've written about, just in the stuff I've looked through, you have UFOs, you got Bigfoot, you got conspiracies, you got a weird take on reincarnation that was incredibly unique. Do you have an interest in, like, the supernatural paranormal stuff, or is it just a tool for your writing?
I think I do definitely have an interest in it. Again, it's one of those distinctions that I think can be a false distinction. I don't think one has. I personally guess don't believe in a distinction between the natural world and the supernatural world.
Yeah.
I think it is possible to just open the doors and windows a little bit wider and include some things within the natural world. Just because people believe things doesn't necessarily mean it's true, of course. But I think it's very easy to access within ourselves certain fears and semi-beliefs about human consciousness and us being open or aware of things which science says we're not supposed to be. So I guess what I tend to do is to try and root things very firmly in the real world, but say, but yes, all of the real world stuff is true, and that's basically where we live. But there are new windows through which you can see other things. That doesn't mean I'm undermining the real world. The real world is still real. This is not a fantasy novel, but let's imagine if within the real world, some of the things that people speculate about are also true. And so that's, I think, what I find interesting, because you've got to root it in the real world to get that frisson. As soon as you leave the real world, then, well, anything goes. You can just make up whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in studying this stuff for so long, I mean, I look at it like this. People have experiences. I think those experiences are real on some level, but they may not be what the person thinks that they are. They may not actually be what the beliefs that are attached to that experience are.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
Have you had any experiences yourself? Anything weird ever happen?
I've had a couple of things that have made me, you know, nothing to take home to the bank, nothing that, you know, I would say counts as proof as anything. But I've had some, and they've tended to be quite sort of personal. So I'm not going to describe what they are now, partly because I also have a theory that, you know, it's like coincidences. Other people's coincidences are incredibly boring because you don't get the context. It's like someone wants to tell you about their dreams. Say, oh, yeah, and then I saw Mrs. Whatever, who used to be at school. And it's like, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never met Mrs. Whatever. This has no resonance for me. Similarly, you having your coincidence just doesn't, you know. And so you often find that when you try and recount these things. And I think you know what you said before was absolutely correct, in that sometimes the effect that things have on you is as much to do with you and your circumstance and what you're feeling at that time. And so things that feel supernatural or feel beyond normal, you know, they may or may not be. But if they stir that sort of reaction deep within you, then I think they count. Yeah. Regardless of whether or not they necessarily were something that can't be explained by rational means.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it. I think consciousness itself plays a big role in what some of these phenomena really will end up being.
Yeah. And no, absolutely. And I think, you know, for people who are interested in this kind of stuff, it's a no-lose. Because if you end up saying, okay, all of this stuff is actually just down to the strangenesses of human consciousness, it's like, well, cool. Isn't it interesting that our consciousness is so strange and weird? Let's look at that. You know, it doesn't go away depending on, you know, just because you can explain it by saying that this is a facet of human consciousness. That actually makes it more interesting.
Well, and I think the way consciousness interacts with reality is something we don't understand. And I think you initially see that with quantum physics, but I think it goes way beyond that.
For sure, yes, without question.
All right, so you do have a novel coming out that you're working on, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah, basically, I'm between publishers at the moment for a variety of reasons. I've just today actually agreed a contract for a new Michael Marshall Smith book, which is not quite like anything I've ever done before. It's kind of out there, but it's a return to sort of using more humor and stuff. So that'll be coming out some point next year. And I'm also, I just this last week finished a first draft of a new Michael Marshall book, which I now need to set aside for a little while and then give it a good sort of kicking and punching and get it to stand up for itself, which, you know, first drafts never really do. So yeah, I'm working on the stuff happening, but at the moment it's a bit of a lull in terms of things actually appearing on bookshelves.
Okay. And would that be like a sci-fi book and a horror book, or
the Michael Marshall Smith book, I don't even know what to call it, to be honest. even by my standards, I've strayed from standard genre classification. It's pretty zany, but it's pretty dark. It has a little flavor of YA to it. I don't even know what it is.
I'm intrigued.
Well, it has a home, thankfully, so that will be coming out. And the other thing, I think you'd call it, I've never seen this term before. Well, it's basically a 14 thriller, I think.
Oh,
it's a thriller,
nice.
which you know, deals with anomalous stuff, you know, because I've been fascinated by that kind of stuff, you know, my whole life, really. And yeah, it's something that I'd really like to try and sort of write about on a more regular basis. So yeah, I've got the first draft of that done, and it needs a bit more work.
So that'll probably be a couple years before we see that one.
I would hope that it would be more toward the end of next year.
Oh, nice.
Because yeah, it should be. I mean, I will be submitting it to an editor, I would say, a couple of months from now, and it, you know, depending. So yeah, I would hope for the second half of next year.
Are any other film stuff you're working on, or is that all done for the moment?
I've slightly shoved that to one side because I've been racing to get to the end of this book, because once I'm in a book, particularly when I'm in the last third of a book, I tend to sort of try and lock out the rest of the world as much as possible, because I need to sort of inhabit what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the meantime pushing along a few sort of TV and film things. As I say, conversations about Strawman, conversations about Spares, the second novel. I'm talking to a guy about that. Certain amount of movement on the Strawman. It's, you know, nothing to hold your breath for, but I'll keep pushing them forward.
I would just, like I said, reading that book, I could just visualize it, and I would so love to see it put on a format that other people who don't read could experience.
I would love to, too, because it's, you know, particularly with some of the sort of slightly more cross-genre stuff, it's amazing how many people are very happy to watch that either in the cinema or on TV, but would never actually consider going to that section of the bookstore, either a real bookstore or a virtual bookstore. It's almost like there's a sort of barrier for it, but if you'll put it on TV, then people think, oh wow, actually no, I do kind of like this kind of stuff. So yeah, I would love to see it happen. It's been through a few attempts before, as I've said, but who knows, maybe one of these days.
All right. And on the web, your website is michaelmarshallsmith.com.
Correct.
And go on.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, yes, it's michaelmarshallsmith.com. I'm also on Twitter as MMS, which is EMEMESS. And I'm on Instagram on that as well. So, yeah, come and say hi.
Okay. Are you on Facebook as well?
I am on Facebook. In the sense, I'm on, yeah, I don't know even what I'm called on Facebook. I assume I'm called by my regular name. I have an author page, but to be honest, PR is something that I struggle with, and so I haven't done a vast amount on that yet. But there is definitely a Michael Marshall Smith page on Facebook, but don't expect much to happen there because I forget to do anything with it. So yeah, the website or Twitter are definitely definitely where what little happens.
Okay, and there's quite a bit on your website.
Yeah, there's so many information, and now that I've got through this first draft, it's on my list of things to try and put some new stuff up there. But there's information about the books and what's happening and any events that I'm doing, and there's also direct links to the two short movies that we mentioned earlier, Later and Unbelief. Another one, actually, a third one, which I'd forgotten about. So yeah, there's stuff to do there. Yeah, come along. Come and have a look.
Yeah, you had The 17th Kind.
17th Kind, yes. Although I don't think you can view that, can you?
No.
Think you can download it. Yeah, 17th Kind was a very silly, slightly science fictional short story that I wrote a while back that they've done a really nice, silly job of adapting to a half-hour movie. So yeah, that's fun. That's fun.
Right. Now,
and you know, as I say, because it's so hard to get any of this stuff done, it's just so nice when actually, and it's very often just, you know, patiently hanging out with people and letting them have their head for a while. And I've been really happy with the results that have happened from that kind of thing so far.
Awesome. Well, thank you for spending some time with us. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
All right, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. And again, I can't recommend his work enough, especially the Straw Man series. However, it is a little brutal at times. So if you're, if you don't like really disturbing type of stuff, I would stay away from it. But if you like that type of stuff, if you like the thriller, the suspense, and with a little bit of Fortiana and Fringe stuff thrown in, I think you'll enjoy it. All right, we're going to take you out with some Eliza Rickman, and that is ElizaRickman. And you can find her on Bandcamp, and we're going to hear Pretty Little Head. And, of course, WhereDidTheRoadGo.com for all your Where Did the Road Go needs. See you next time.
Drop it down to the bottom. Butterfly flow, flick a saw to the top. Kill for the thrill, cut it, stick it where you got 'em. Circle rolling under, running red to the stop. Where's your mother? Fall down dead. Dirty mind, dirty mouth, pretty little head. I wish you were here, I wish you'd make a dirty mouth, pretty little head.